I'm Derek Russell.
And I'm Brad Locke, and this is The Memo.
A gathering of all things Northeast Mississippi, brought to you by The Daily Journal and DJournal.com.
Hey everybody, welcome into a new episode of The Memo for this Wednesday, July the 26th. Yes, I should know that. It's the day after my anniversary.
Say it with confidence, Brad.
I say a few things with confidence. It's Chris Kiefer. He almost dropped the mic before the show started.
Shh, almost not broke. Like in a...
It was
not in a confident kind of way.
No, almost like...
Kind of the exact opposite of confidence. What would that be?
Oops.
Yes. That. In an oops kind of way.
Bumbling.
Yes. Bumbling kind of way.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
No problem.
That's okay.
You almost just destroyed several hundred dollars worth of equipment. It's fine.
Yeah, no, you're good.
But I didn't.
True. All's well that ends well.
Yeah.
How you doing,
speaking
Derek?
Did you see the story about the squirrel in, was it in Central Park?
No.
I hadn't seen this.
I haven't seen any squirrel stories lately.
That is the aggressive squirrel terrorized in Brooklyn. You know, Ray Stevens taught us something about that as children, I believe.
Yes, he did.
We should all be familiar with.
Yes, he did.
An unusually aggressive Brooklyn squirrel has attacked 5 people.
I mean, if it's going to happen somewhere, you'd expect it to be Brooklyn, right?
It may have rabies. They probably should have put that in the headline.
Rabid squirrel.
Yeah. Yeah. Health department officials in New York are warning people about a potentially rabid and, quote, unusually aggressive squirrel.
Is he mugging?
Not squirrel, quotes. Maybe not just unusually aggressive. Is it squirrel in question?
Is it at the park? I forget the name of the big park that's in Brooklyn. Is it the park or just random?
Let's find out. And I read 5 people were bitten by a squirrel from July 18th to 20th. Well, he did a weekend of it near the Parkside and Ocean Avenue entrance to Prospect Park.
Prospect Park, that's what it was.
According to the New York City Health Department. This is an isolated incident. Squirrels are rarely infected with rabies. However, based on the unusual aggressive behavior, the health department is acting under the assumption that the animal is rabid.
So how do you get rid of it? You just got to go where it was and just look for it and see which, if it's acting weird. Thing.
You know how do you find out if something's rabies to get rid of it? I mean, not to get rid of it, but to the only true test, other than you being infected. But if you have a suspicion that an animal is rabid, like a raccoon or something, and it hasn't bitten anybody to prove that it has rabies, the only way to know is to cut the head off.
Really?
It's like a Highlander.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the only way to know.
And you know this because your wife's a vet, right? Or you just happen to know this?
This is just knowledge 101.
Wait, so how does cutting the head off... if you cut the head off and the head still moves, that means it had rabies?
Yes. If it pulls a sword on you and comes back, it has rabies.
And it's also a zombie.
Let's see. Rabies. Here you go.
Cut the head off.
Is it like you test the brain or something?
Hope no one's having their meal while listening to this.
For animals that have bitten a person, a 10-day quarantine is the usual way of determining if they have rabies. Quarantine is not all that bad. It's kind of like an all-inclusive weekend resort, except instead of tuxedoed waiters and umbrella drinks, you are in an animal control cage. Where's the part with the...
Where's the part about the decapitation?
Yeah, I'm getting there.
That's what I want to know.
The other part of the whole rabies thing is less savory. Actually, it's downright horrifying and fairly disgusting, so let's give... And dive right in, since our domestic
species... You never know what you're going to learn about when you click to listen on the memo.
I'm telling you, we are journalism. Since our domestic species tend to canoodle with wild animals from time to time, we can and do get rabies. Our public health folks think of vaccinating our dogs and cats against rabies more of a way of protecting us humans than protecting the pets. 10-day quarantine.
You said canoodle.
I'm getting there.
It's a good word.
The only definitive way to determine if an animal has rabies is to examine the brain.
Nah.
This is impossible to do while alive. Blood and other anti-mortem tests are not reliable enough when a human life is on the line. This means cutting the head off and submitting it to state lab tests for rabies testing.
Oh.
This test is not optional if your pet is not currently vaccinated for rabies.
So if you do that and then you find out it didn't have rabies,
you're like, oops.
One less raccoon, I guess. Sounds like a George Romero movie. You must remove the head.
Well, now I feel more informed, Derek.
Well, you're welcome. So, yeah, that's what happens. When you put a potato in the microwave.
I hope they catch the squirrel.
Yeah. Have I told you my weird roadkill story? when I was in Tampa?
I don't know.
Well, you know, roadkill's a staple of the South.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Possums, raccoons.
Like bugs on the windshield is just a thing.
And unfortunately, in the highway, you see dogs and deer a lot of the time, too. So I'm not too surprised at seeing certain kinds of roadkill more often than not. But I was in Tampa a few years ago, and I'd rented a car, and I was driving, and it was the sun had not completely set yet, but it was getting dark, and I came up on something in the road, not on the side of the road or anything, just very large in the road. I was like, what? It was a gator.
A gator.
Dead in the road.
In Louisiana, that's happens.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you've seen that?
I've never seen it, but I've heard stories.
It was very off-putting just to come up on that.
How big was
there? It was huge. It was absolutely huge. Like, it had to have done some damage to the vehicle.
Yeah. And even if you run over it after it's dead, that's not going to help.
And
it
wasn't
still bad.
Really. I mean, nobody else had hit it again. You know, most times we see roadkill, somebody's hit it again. Like, it wasn't. It was still pretty well preserved lying there, but he was just on his back.
So did you get out and drag it off the road?
No, I did not. I wish I still had the picture. I did roll the window down and lean out of the driver's window and snap just to take a picture of it. But that thing was just on his back.
This is on the interstate?
No, I mean it was on a highway, but it wasn't on a, you know.
So it wasn't like, yeah.
It wasn't on an interstate, no, but it was.
Huh.
It was on a 4-lane highway.
Another day in Florida.
Seriously. I mean, it was so weird.
Listen, I'm not moving to Florida because of the gators. They just come up in your backyard,
man. There's
so
many reasons not to move to Florida.
Well, that and the
sinkholes.
It's even hotter there than here, I guess. Although you don't, I mean, winters are pleasant, I guess. But yeah, sinkholes. I'm not a fan of the beach.
Florida has the weirdest news.
It's too flat. Well, you know, there's a Twitter account.
The weirdest criminals.
There's a Twitter account called Florida Man, just dedicated to headlines about Florida Man does so-and-so. Because they have some weird stuff going on down there, man.
And Mississippi doesn't.
Well, yeah, true. But Florida is like a whole other level, it seems like. Maybe I should start that Twitter account, Mississippi Man.
I mean, if you want to inform yourself, listeners, just go to Google and type in Florida and then click the news button. Because you're going to get some stuff. Scientists dispute snake release in Florida Garden of Eden.
What?
Man hit by train in Florida. Florida wildlife officials investigating video of boat dragging shark. Yes, there is video.
Of course there is.
Alligator attacks and bites off toes of man bathing in Florida pond.
Well, hey, why are you bathing in a Florida pond or any pond?
That's true.
You kind of have it coming.
Drives over umbrellas on beach while drinking. I don't know that one cuts off while drinking from a whiskey bottle. But the picture is of President Trump.
What?
I don't know. That's not it. Look.
They got the wrong featured image pulled
in
there.
It's time. I don't know. But there.
Yeah. There it is.
That's funny.
Yeah. So
maybe it was him. I don't know. It could be more longer. He could have been driving around. Nobody knows.
Wow. Well. So, what? Go ahead.
So, Florida beheading. Who do we have on the show today?
Oh, yeah. Let's move on to that. We've got Caleb Adillion and...
Caleb and William are both going to talk about...
Say it with confidence, Brad.
Sorry, I suddenly wasn't sure if I was correct. But also, Josh Mitchell's going to join
separately.
Us.
Separately. So...
Confident.
Caleb and William will talk together about the big Sunday package they had looking at the crime in Tupelo. William had done a big statistical analysis on that and looking at kind of numbers, trends through the years, and... Caleb's story kind of looked at community engagement efforts and efforts to kind of help against that. So that, and then Josh Mitchell is coming on after that. And if William's able to stay, we'll have him stay for that one also, looking at opioids and
abuse and all
that. Yeah, opioid abuse. There was a story that Josh had last week about, was it Alcorn
and
Tishomingo
County
being among the highest opioid rates in the country, and then William also covered last week a town hall about opioid abuse. Yeah. That's why we'll try to keep him on for both segments.
And Lauren Wood will be here to talk about her In Focus photo essay from this week.
Yeah.
So there you go. All right, Caleb Adillion and William Moore here, as promised, to talk about crime statistics in Tupelo. How y'all doing?
Hey there, Brad.
Doing well.
Good, good. You had a nice little package of stories. This past
I don't know how little it was. Both stories jumped twice.
Man,
there was a lot of facts and figures to sort through.
I bet there was.
We're dealing with almost, over 20 years worth of numbers.
And you've been working on this for weeks, haven't you? Pretty much, or been trying to get the info for weeks.
Yeah,
months.
Yeah, you've been taking a
there
while.
There was some waiting there at the beginning.
Sure, sure. But it kind of focuses around how the crime rate in Tupelo has, you know, it was pretty low for a while after being up in the 90s. Now it's starting to creep back upward. And, you know, we've had five murders this year.
We've had five homicides this year.
Five homicides.
And, you know, five in the first 6 months, but they were actually all five within a 10-week period.
Wow.
I mean, starting in late April with the double homicide on Jackson Street, going to the one in early June, shooting in Waffle House in the parking lot.
Jeez.
At 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah, and you've got one out there that's a double homicide that's still unsolved, right?
Yeah, the first one's still unsolved.
Yeah.
And that's only, I mean, that's two of only three in the past 7 years that are unsolved.
Yeah, and when you look at the numbers and how low they were at one point, and we're not just talking about homicides, we're talking about aggravated assault, robberies, all that sort of stuff. Like, for instance, aggravated assaults, there were 88 back in 1997, got down to like 15 or less within the next 6-7 years.
Yeah, and
going back up now, I guess.
Yeah, you talk to officers who were around back in the late 90s. I mean, they'll talk about the fact, you know, it was the Wild Wild West. I mean, it was crime everywhere. The deputy police chief said, you know, in one of the years, I think in 98, he was assigned 380 felony investigation cases.
Jeez.
In 1 year.
That's more than one a day.
That's more than one a day. And there was another detective who had 410 in that year. I mean, it was bad at that point. And, you know, and they had to work hard to try to get rid of a lot of that crime. And, you know, like I said, things did taper off.
Go ahead, Caleb.
William mentioned 1998, which we should point out, since 1996, so that's more than a little bit more than a 20-year period, 1998 is our record year for murders in the city. There were seven that year.
Yeah. Yes.
And then, of course, we've had five this year. Hopefully we'll have no more this year, but certainly this year is easily the number two spot right now.
Right, in recent history.
Right, right. And you wonder, you know, why is it? And I think there's probably, obviously, there's just a number of different factors, William, as to why this and other numbers have gone up. And how much of it is reflective of kind of just the national crime rate?
Well, I mean, the police are saying, you know, some of it is reflective of just a national crime rate, national attitudes.
Yeah.
I mean, folks are getting desperate or taking desperate measures. You know, when you're dealing with homicides, you know, a lot of times, you know, it is a crime of passion. You know, and folks will sit there, you know, it might be, you know, one of these cases, there's the shooting, the two guys were best friends.
Yeah.
I mean, had grown up their entire lives, you know, and then a series of things happened, and all of a sudden one shot the other.
Jeez. Man.
You know, the police, you know, you're talking about, you know, crime, you know, and trying to prevent crime. There's certain crimes like that, you know, it's really hard to prevent. It happened in the spur of the moment. And
Yeah. I mean, you can, it's a lot easier to prevent some of these other crimes from ever happening.
More patrols can help burglaries and things like that, but.
Right. When it comes to something like homicide, it's just like you said, it happens behind closed doors a lot of the times. You can't really predict it. Because, like I said, it could happen in a fit of passion. And
It's also worth pointing out that even though the homicide numbers for this year are certainly not positive numbers, the numbers are still low enough. It's not really possible to quantify it such that you can talk about a trend. I mean, when you're averaging one or two homicides a year, all it takes is an additional two or three to cause 30% or 40% or a 50% or more spike. But in absolute numbers, you're still not talking about an enormous amount. As no comfort to the victims or family members of the victims, but in terms of the safety of the city as a whole, or talking about a trend, you need larger data sets to be able to safely talk about trends.
Yeah, and it's not just Tupelo either. I mean, as I think it was Alan Gilbert that pointed out that it's happening in other areas around here, like Ripley and Columbus. And
right, a double homicide outside of Walnut.
Yeah,
where they arrested four people on that. You know, there's been several shootings in Corinth and.
Yep.
Again, same thing down in Columbus. It's just, I mean, there's been a recent trend where there have been more shootings lately.
Yeah, aggravated assaults and robberies have also more than doubled in recent years, from 17 aggravated assaults in 2013 in Tupelo to 41 last year. Robberies went from 19 in 2014 to 53 2 years later. Now, part of that may be due to the growth of the city. I know Tupelo has annexed some portions, so you've got a bigger population. I don't know how much bigger.
See, that's the funny thing. The annexation went into effect in 2012.
And yeah.
There seems to be a 1 or 2 year lag before you start seeing some of those crime categories you're talking about go up. And Annex, William, I wasn't even here then. How many people did annexation bring into the city?
The estimate, it was less than 3,000 people.
Right, so we're not talking about, it brought in more territory that the city police have to patrol, but it didn't bring in an enormous amount of people.
And it seems like a lot of these are kind of happening in one particular area in South.
Well, some of these are happening, but also, and some of the increase is also the fact that, a lot of times, Tupelo is the big city. Folks come to Tupelo, they come to Tupelo to eat.
Yeah.
They come to Tupelo to shop, and they also, unfortunately, come to Tupelo to commit crimes.
Yeah.
If this is where stuff's happening, that's where, people are going to try to come. So some of the crime increase has been because of, people from outside Tupelo coming here to, create felonious mayhem.
Right, right. So that's worth maybe amending my previous statement to note, if the region as a whole is growing, that could drive an increase in crime in Tupelo, even if Tupelo per se within its city limits is not experiencing the kind of growth that would alone drive these numbers.
Now, one thing that can be a preventive measure for homicide is getting guns out of the hands of people that don't need them, and that's where checkpoints can come in. You mentioned that as well. That's gotten several guns off the streets, haven't they?
Yeah, since the first of the year, checkpoints are a good way to, start the process. Yeah, but between, checkpoints and other ongoing investigations and stuff, they've taken more than 200 guns off the streets.
Yeah, wow. Yeah,
One of the problems they're running into is, they'll sit there and stop people and look at, realize, all right, well, this gun is most likely stolen.
Yeah.
But there's no evidence because the homeowners haven't written down the make and model of the gun or the serial number.
Right.
So when the cops find this person with a gun that probably shouldn't have a gun, there's no way to prove that it was stolen.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're running into a problem there.
Right, right. The community has obviously taken note of this increase in crime, Caleb, and you had a story accompanying William's story about the crime stats, talking about some residents trying to kind of take back their neighborhood over in the Green Tea Road area. It's Ward 7, Willie Jennings, councilman. He's taking part in this. And I know they recently had some kind of town hall meeting, and they're trying to find a way to kind of lessen the crime over there that spiked.
Right. Not all of the crime, or even, our two first homicides were on West Jackson Street. That was the double homicide. But some of our other incidents, and even a lot of the non-lethal crime, tends to be concentrated on the south end of the city, Ward 7. So neighborhoods, that would be Southern Heights and Haven Acres, have kind of leaders in that neighborhood, have been vocal about trying to be proactive. And then Green Tea, which is technically not in the city limits, but it's right outside city limits. Yeah. It's not even, you can see Haven Acres from Green Tea Road.
Yeah, like I say, crime doesn't stop at the city limits.
That's right. That's right. So those three neighborhoods have in recent months, driven by somewhat the headlines we've seen about violent crime, but also driven by kind of grassroots concern in those neighborhoods about even smaller stuff, vandalism, kids kind of roaming the streets at night and not appearing to be up to much good, even if they're not, overtly doing anything illegal. So all that's driven a lot of community concern. So, yeah, we had a forum in Ward 7 a couple weeks ago. Willie Jennings, councilman for Ward 7, had a lot to do with putting that together. And that was just to give residents of those areas an opportunity to talk about what they're seeing, what their concerns are, and what they would like to see done. And one of the big things that came out of that, just to me as an observer, is seems to be a lot of consensus that it's youth crime, youth delinquency driving a lot of this, and then maybe people that are just kind of beyond that youth category, maybe early 20s. And I don't know, William, looked at ages on some, you know?
Well, I mean, that was one of the things that, you know, that the police were talking about as well, that, you know, most of their crime, the shootings, aggravated assaults, the more violent side of crime, most of the time, both the victims and the suspects, they're saying, are, you know, young adults, either late teens, early to mid-20s.
Yeah.
You know, and then looking at, you know, the arrest recently, you know, it's borne out, in fact, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, you had the Theron Nichols shooting as a prime example, a lot of young people involved in that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, those folks ranged anywhere from, you know, 16 to mid-20s.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, we're seeing more and more juveniles being arrested and charged as adults.
It does seem like just my own observations lately of seeing what's coming across our website, that it seems like we're seeing more and more, and maybe it's just an anomaly, but more and more teenagers getting charged as adults.
Well, there's 4 or 5 juveniles in the Lee County adult jail right now.
Wow.
You know, charged with felonies out of Tupelo. You know, some of them date back to last year, but.
Right, right. Man.
So, yes, that's something that's of concern in these neighborhoods. And so a lot of the conversation I've heard has been about outreach efforts to that demographic, be a faith-based outreach or more, you know, publicly funded outreach, including like the PAL program, the Police Athletic League, or private nonprofits like the Boys and Girls Club. There's a lot of interest in trying to increase the depth of engagement and make sure the outreach there is directed where it needs to be.
Well, go ahead.
It also seemed like, you know, at the community meeting, that the organizers were trying to more gauge the input of the community. You know, how much are they willing to step forward and take over? I know, you know, 20, 25 years ago, crime was terrible in Haven Acres. And, you know, and the community at that point stepped up, you know, and said, you know, this is our neighborhood. We just don't want this anymore.
Right, right. So, yeah, that was definitely a key part of that Ward 7 forum, is just trying to engage the people that do live there, that are law-abiding citizens, and get them activated into kind of a cohesive group of people that can kind of stand for a positive change. Definitely, as William said, Haven Acres is kind of often held up locally and has even gotten some broader press, too, as a real example of a community that turned itself around from being absolutely crime-ridden to very little crime.
I think mentioned in your story the fact that the makeup of the neighborhood has changed, where, you know, 20, 25 years ago, they were all homeowners, and now those older homeowners have died.
That's right. That's right. So in Green Tea, I'm hearing from people that live there in Green Tea and Haven Acres both, we've kind of seen a cycle that, you know, we've seen in a lot of neighborhoods in Tupelo. Older homeowners die, and for a lot of different reasons, those homes don't get sold back into the owner-occupied market. Landlords buy those homes, and they turn into rentals. And, you know, one thing Willie Jennings told me, it's not just, you know, often, you know, homeowners have the fear, oh, as soon as renters come in, you know, the neighborhood's going to fall apart. And it's not, you know, Willie Jennings, of course, he is a landlord himself. He's pointing out, it's not just that renters automatically bring crime. It's really two things. One is, if you have unscrupulous landlords that don't manage their properties, you're going to have problems. And two, even if you've got great renters, they just don't tend to get engaged in the neighborhood. They probably are not going to live there long term. They're going to be there and then out, and then you're going to have someone else in that property. So it's hard to build a cohesive, like, community leadership, or just a cohesive sense of the community.
Because they don't have that long-term investment in the community. It's more like, all right, we're going to be here for a couple of years, then we're going to move on to a
And that's what you had in Haven Acres. You had a lot of people that had lived there a long time, and they all knew each other, and they were able to kind of stand together to effect a positive change in what was happening. And if you don't have a lot of people that have that sense of long-term investment, it can be hard to get people to commit to showing up to 2-hour forums at night when you're off and that's your personal time. So that's another thing those neighborhoods are working on.
Yeah, I feel like we could talk about this all day. But We do have other things to talk about, and you can certainly read more about this in Sunday's Journal or djournal.com. Just excellent reporting all the way through on this, and hopefully things will get better, and I know we'll be keeping track of it. So, William, Caleb, thank you all for filling us in.
Absolutely.
Glad to be here.
Be sure to listen to the two sports podcasts we produce here at the Daily Journal. Prep Rally is a high school sports podcast with myself and, well, no longer Gene Phelps. He's retiring. He's retiring at the end of this week, and he couldn't make it for this week's episode. So we're going to have the new guy, Dalton Middleton, co-hosting with me. Yes.
This be his first time on Prep Rally?
Dalton's first time, our new high school sports specialist, as we call it, the position. New episodes every Wednesday, so look for one today. That's dropped today already. Yeah. You can listen in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at preprally.djournal.com.
Sure.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State fans, be sure to check out the Double Coverage podcast. Ole Miss beat reporter Paris Alford and MBC reporter Logan Lowry release new episodes each Thursday in which they provide game previews, insight, commentary, and analysis on the Bulldogs and Rebels. Listen to it for free in iTunes, your podcast apps, or at doublecoverage.djournal.com. Logan, of course, gets to talk about MSU football having started camp on Tuesday.
Parrish have to talk Parrish about
probably has something to talk about, I'm sure. I don't know what, but they don't start camp till next week, so it's kind of a dead period at Ole Miss. Not much going on. Yeah. Kind of quiet over
nothing
there.
Nothing going on?
Nope. You guys nothing recorded last week's episode. I know you filled in for Logan.
Last week
just
we recorded
hours before the Hugh Freeze news, and probably the whole show was about Freeze's comments.
Yeah, last Thursday we
What Hugh Freeze news? What did I miss?
Don't worry about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we recorded it that morning, and then like that afternoon, and suddenly that podcast episode was totally irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about how Hugh handled himself at Media Days the few days earlier, and it was just,
yeah.
It happens.
We had that night, actually, Thursday night, as the paper was getting ready to go to press, John Pitts, our sports editor, walked over to Lee Smith, who's on the sports copy desk, and caught at the last minute the promo, I think, for Prep Rally, for Double Coverage, which she had done early in the day, talked about, listen, about Hugh Freeze's comments.
Oh, yeah. Like,
we might want to change that promo. And so I think it just says something general about
sort of deleted
talk football. But that episode changed in a hurry.
Breaking news messes stuff up. Speaking of news,
you could also get ready for your day with the Daily Journal's news break, a quick summary of news, sports, weather, and everything else Northeast Mississippi in a 5-minute video each weekday at 7 a.m. at djournal.com, hosted by Brad Thaddeus Locke.
What? That's not my middle name.
It is for now.
Okay. Thaddeus.
Yeah.
Could be worse. Just saw Dalton Middleton, speak of the devil, wandering around out there. I think he's lost. Maybe just trying to find his way around the journal.
It's a maze in that labyrinth. Every time I walk through the cubicles to go to budget every morning, I'm like, there better be some cheese at the end of this.
How do we get out of here? I'm trapped.
Yeah, that's the idea.
That's the reason.
It's very disorienting.
That's the ring Gene's finally retiring. He just figured out finally how to get out of the cubicles.
Marty Russell had a bit about that years ago, about wavering through the never-ending maze of cubicles.
Yeah, and then they keep changing it every few years. They'll like open up a wall or
that's just so we get stuck. They're like, I finally found a way out, and then you get to the end of a wall. So
okay, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. William Moore is staying with us today to discuss a further problem, and Josh Mitchell, our Corinth Dispatch, is joining us as well. Gentlemen, how are you?
Doing well.
Doing well.
Excellent. Josh, you had a story on Corinth today, back a few days ago, on how Alcorn and Tishomingo counties are among the highest opioid prescribing counties in the nation. So do you know where to get them, or...
No, I don't.
Okay, I just want to get that out of the way first off. what are some of the reasons that these two specific counties are getting such high numbers?
You know, I didn't see any data on what made these counties have such high prescription numbers. I just had the numbers themselves. But certainly, Alcorn and Tishomingo County stand out in Northeast Mississippi as being the only two in this region of the state that are in that highest quartile, and Alcorn and Tishomingo County are only two of 17 counties in the whole state that are in that highest level. And with there being 82 counties in Mississippi, these counties certainly do stand out from other parts of the state. So I'm not exactly sure why these two counties would have such high opioid prescription numbers compared to other counties, but it's definitely an interesting question, and that's probably something that needs to be explored by the experts to see if we can get a handle on the issue, because according to the CDC, the amount of opioids prescribed in the U.S. is still too high, and that can lead to a lot of problems.
I know you had a fact in there about the amount of overdose deaths back in 2015 were over 50,000, 63% involving some an opioid, which is just insane to think about. William, you recently attended a symposium about opioid use here in the state. What were some of the facts that they were giving out there?
Well, I mean, that's one. Well, I mean, you know, they're describing it, you know, as an epidemic here.
Yeah.
You know, it's a problem all over the nation. You know, of all the I mean, just to look at you know, hydrocodone, of all the hydrocodone used in the world, America consumes 99.7% of it.
That's
you know,
amazing.
Folks, in, I mean, this is a particularly American problem.
Yeah.
You know, folks, some folks are looking for an, you know, an easy high. And, you know, it's becoming more and more a problem. I mean, like, you know, Josh said, you know, Alcorn and Tishomingo County, you know, not only are they, you know, among the highest in this area, I mean, they are, you know, among the highest prescribing counties in the state, you know, looking at a per capita basis. You know, Mississippi as a whole, there's enough opioids prescribed each year for every man, woman, and child to have a bottle of 77 opioid pills.
That's incredible.
You know, and you, you know, it's sad, is what it is. And you know, they were saying, you know, that one of the things that could be driving the numbers up for, you know, Alcorn and Tishomingo County, it's not that the people there per se are consuming all of these opioids being prescribed. A lot of times, there are organized groups who will bring people into towns, take them to doctors where they pretend to have back problems or what, in order to get prescriptions.
Yeah.
And then those prescriptions are converted into pills, and then those pills go onto the street. You know, because you'll have people, you know, who might have been, you know, just your average working guy who did something, pulled his back, broke a leg, or it was prescribed painkillers and then ended up getting addicted to them. You know, and they're now looking for them however they can find them.
Yeah. What are some of the ways medical agencies, questions for you both, are combating the, what are better ways that the screening process is what I'm getting toward that are weeding out people who are obviously abusing this?
Well, I talked to our hospital here in Corinth, Magnolia Regional Health Center, about the study and the high amount of opioids that were being prescribed in Alcorn and Tishomingo County. And the hospital said that that it monitors these opioid prescriptions by enrolling in the Mississippi Board of Pharmacy Prescription Drug Monitoring Program, and that it is standard practice in the emergency department to check that program before prescribing narcotics. And then when the hospital, you know, encounters patients with suspected drug use disorders, it will work with different agencies to come up with treatment and referral options. So it appears there's an effort underway to get a handle on this. But still, when you look at the numbers, Alcorn County has a problem because in 2015, the amount of opioids prescribed here was more than twice the national figure on a per capita basis. But I guess the good news is in Alcorn County is that the amount that was prescribed in 2015 has decreased some compared to, you know, prior years. But that, unfortunately, the same can't be said about Tishomingo County, because there the amount of opioids prescribed in 2015 increased from 2010, which goes against national trends. And because nationally, the amount of opioids prescribed in the United States peaked in 2010 and has decreased every year through 2015. But the numbers today are still much higher than the levels back in 1999. And one other thing is that to give you an idea of the interesting thing about the CDC study was that it looked at opioid prescriptions by county throughout the United States, and it showed this huge variation where, you know, you have counties like Alcorn and Tishomingo that are just way up there at the top of having very high levels of opioid, the amount of opioids prescribed. But then you've got these other counties that aren't that high. So the study found that in the highest level counties, like that there were 6 times more opioids prescribed in those counties compared to the lowest prescribing counties. So there's this huge variation. So the study basically concluded that that healthcare, there needs to be more done to improve these prescribing practices, some kind of standardization, I guess. I don't know if that's the correct word.
It is. It is.
The CDC has published this guidelines for prescribing opioids for chronic pain, and so that was another thing the study found.
That's one of the things that you know, the Mississippi Bureau of Narcotics and other agencies have joined forces, and you know, they're having a whole series of town hall meetings across the state. I mean, 8 or 9 of them, you know, this summer to talk about this issue. You know, the prescribing, you know, their folks are recommending that doctors prescribe less, you know, no more than a 7-day prescription, you know, instead of giving somebody a bottle of 100 pills. Mm-hmm. You know, and the other thing was, you know, Josh mentioned the prescription monitor program. The, you know, the PMP is a very useful tool. I mean, literally, if somebody comes in to get a prescription, you know, every pharmacist out there looks it up and or can look it up and see, all right, well, this person, you know, just got a prescription last week. They shouldn't need another one.
Right.
And it's the same way the doctors, you know, if somebody comes in claiming to have a back pain, they could look in this prescription monitor program and see when the last time they were prescribed opioids. But the problem is it's a volunteer program.
Right.
You know, it hadn't got to the point where doctors, nurses who can prescribe, and anybody else who can prescribe, you know, controlled substances is required to use it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, our very own outspoken state representative, Steve Holland, was at this town hall meeting, you know, and he was, you know, that was one of the things he was complaining about was the fact that when they set it up, it was a volunteer, and, you know, and he's thinking, all right, well, it's now time to make it mandatory for all doctors to use this program.
Absolutely. It's such an easy drug from the standpoint of just popping a pill. I mean, it's so easy for people to get addicted to something like
that. Well, and that's one of the things, you know, that you go to the seminars and even at the town hall meeting, they were talking about the fact, you know, people will get addicted to these opioids, to prescription medication.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, it costs, you know, $20 a pill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, instead of paying $20 a pill, they can go on the street and buy heroin for $5 a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it becomes a simple economic issue there. So more and more folks are switching to more illicit drugs, which is causing more and more problem because a lot of times what they think is heroin is actually a synthetic opioid like fentanyl, which is 1,000 times stronger, and folks are overdosing.
Yeah, that's just a supply and demand issue at that point. Jeez, good information from you both. William, you recently had a series with Michaela on opioid use that won a couple of awards.
Had a series last year, and you know, after going to these recent seminars, you know, there'll be an upcoming series as well about the, you know, continuing problems with it.
Well, you won a couple of awards, so congrats on for that.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, that's not a good thing to report on, I guess, but obviously good reporting on it. So thank you both for being here today.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you.
Hey, be sure to watch the Daily Journal's Capitol View webcast each Monday afternoon at djournal.com. Capitol Bureau Chief Bobby Harrison provides commentary and analysis on the issues being debated in Jackson. You can watch live Monday afternoons about 2 o'clock or catch the replay later in the day. 2017 legislative session is over, but Bobby will continue to provide perspective about all the news coming out of the state capitol. Lauren Wood joining us now. Hello, Lauren. How are you?
Hi. I'm okay. How are you?
Good, good, good. Hey, let's talk to you about the InFocus photo essay that you had this week. It runs every Monday.
Uh-huh.
You, Adam, and Thomas take turns doing that. This week, yes. You went and checked out some people playing this game that I've never heard of.
Because
a couple games, sorry.
Yeah. Mostly.
Yeah. Magic the Gathering is one of them.
You've never heard of it?
Yeah,
I'm sure I have.
Wait a minute.
Wow. I'm sure I've probably heard of it.
I don't know. It's been around for a long, long time.
I don't.
When you double down, you really double down on stuff.
If I've heard of it, it's been recent. but I've never played those kind of games for whatever reason.
Well, it's like, okay, so it's at Tupelo Sports Cars and Games, and every week they host a couple different, couple are tournaments, others are more just like kind of get-togethers where they play, and they play Magic the Gathering, Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and Pokemon cards.
Oh, okay.
And they actually like play.
I've heard of those.
Yeah, not just like, you can go there and buy them and collect them and that whole aspect of it too, but they also have like sports cards, like baseball cards and stuff there. That might interest you.
I used to collect baseball cards, yeah.
So, but this is like Tuesday nights, they play kind of a more informal Magic the Gathering kind of format of the game. And then Friday nights, they'll have tournaments for Magic. Saturdays around 11, they play Yu-Gi-Oh! And then Sundays around, I think, 1, they play Pokemon. So
they're playing for money, big pot.
I actually like forgot to ask that, but they.
I was joking. I don't know.
I think they play for money though, because they pay in $5.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking there's also like regional tournaments and like national tournaments.
Really?
Yeah, you can like go and play and compete for money and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really intense. Like I grew up around Pokemon and like have the cards, but never like played it and stuff.
Yeah.
Even though I could probably learn and figure it out because I know kind of the game and I've played the video game and everything.
Sure.
But the Magic was very, even Yu-Gi-Oh! Watching them, I was very like overwhelmed. I feel like one of the guys said, he was like, it's really easy to learn how to play, but really hard to master it.
Hmm.
I was like, that's a good way to put that. Because you can get your cards and you can play, like, you know, learn and play in your playing field and stuff, but then like mastering the game is a lot harder.
Yeah, those kind of games kind of intimidate me. Like, I'm doing good just to play Trash or Rummy and remember how to play that as well. So yeah, pretty involved looking games there.
It's, you know, you collect and it, actually I didn't go to this, but on Friday night they had a draft and they opened new decks of cards to like add to their decks and stuff.
Yeah.
So they like kind of make, you know,
sort of like fantasy baseball.
I don't know.
Kind of.
I don't know.
Have a draft.
But so it's kind of, you know, and like some of the cards they were selling, like Magic cards there.
Yeah.
There was one card that was like almost $80. Dude. Like just one card.
I don't know if I have any baseball cards worth that much.
Yeah. And it's because it's like that powerful card and like it's really rare. So you have to, you know, if you want it, you can add it to your deck. Or you can open a new deck. You know, that's actually kind of like Pokemon cards. When I was younger, we would, like, it was always exciting because you never knew what you were going to get in your deck.
Yeah.
And you could get, like, really kind of rare stuff. Yeah, I already have, like, 4 of these.
That's what I liked about collecting baseball cards is getting certain players I wanted or a rare card. Or, you know, back in the day, I don't know if it happens as much now, Chris or whoever. I don't know if anybody else in here collected them, but get those error cards where they made a mistake and they end up being worth a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I got a couple of Nolan Ryan cards like that once. And
rookie cards, I remember that was always like the huge
thing. Yeah, yeah, rookie cards, and if they went on to become like Hall of Fame players, it could be worth something.
Was, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's really cool, and it's kind of a place, you know, you can come hang out, and they even have like snacks for sale and, you know, all the kind of drinks, so you can kind of just come and play and enjoy. And, you know, a lot of the guys are all friends too. Like, there were some women there too, not just guys, but, you know, they're all friends and kind of know each other. And it's kind of cool. They get together thing they do.
Tupelo Sports Cards and Games. Yeah. Where is that located?
It is actually in the like strip near like Ashley Furniture and Best Buy.
Okay.
Kyoto.
Down North
Kyoto.
Gloucester.
Right in that strip. So.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I know. It was really cool. So if you're interested or like want to go check it out or learn more, people were really nice and kind of trying to explain it to me. And I was like,
so you can just join
a lot.
So you can just come in and join in and play if you want.
I'm sure like if you wanted to like do some research first, I would like probably advise that.
But like if that's a game you're into.
Please just show up.
Just show up.
Now, what if you're like already into that game?
Oh, yeah. Definitely go.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Or, you know, like, you know, there's also a group that I photographed. They were playing other, like, other board games or card games and stuff. Like, the Sheriff of Nottingham was the one that they were playing.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, yeah, we like Magic, but we just wanted to not do that. And we just wanted to play, like, other games and stuff.
Yeah.
So there's real, and then, like, one girl was sitting there. She was, like, just sitting and playing video game on her laptop and stuff. So, like, you can just go and
hang out.
Do what you want. Yeah, hang out and stuff. So,
Chris, video idea, me just showing up and trying to play Magic the Gathering.
First person, give you a GoPro.
Yes.
Dude, why are you wearing that camera?
High camera.
Like an office-style documentary, like, we'll just, like, you'll step out, like, every few minutes and, like, tell, like,
what's going on. Like, I have no idea what's going on.
What the heck?
players will be like, yeah, well, this guy just showed up.
Occasionally it just snap zooms to you and you look at the camera and shrug and go,
this guy's a moron. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's cool. And like you don't have to like memorize every single card. Like, you know, they would like read what this card does and like, oh, this one means I have to put an extra mana out or whatever.
I'm really bad at learning
or whatever, you know.
I'm really bad at learning new games. Mm-hmm. I have to just kind of play it to get it.
Usually. And that's I was trying to like watch and learn, and I was like, I would have to come back and watch a couple more times, I think.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, good stuff. That's cool. Again, that's in the Monday's Journal. Also find it at djournal.com. Mm-hmm. As always, thank you, Lauren.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for another show. You know, Derek and I were talking off the air about the Psych movie. I'm pretty psyched for it. Psych, the movie. Loved that show.
Kids, Psych was a TV show that was on USA some years ago.
Yes, not that long ago. It's been off the air maybe 3 or 4 years.
Didn't it go off in like,
I don't know,
11?
Really? That long? Time flies when you're getting old, man. It was on for like seven or eight
2014.
Seasons.
You're right. 2014, you're right.
Okay. I didn't think it'd been that long. But yeah, they got the movie coming out now, so I'm all pumped about Sean and Gus coming back.
Back out again. Everything gets to come back now these days.
Why not if it's good stuff?
Roseanne's coming back.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, maybe that doesn't need to happen.
Back on...
Really?
Back with,
we're going to get John Goodman back?
John Goodman's coming back. Everybody's coming back for
it. Is it going to be a Netflix
no,
thing?
No, it's ABC.
Really?
Airing it again.
Are they like... I never really watched that show much. Just did whatever. What did I think?
Oh, I watched Roseanne.
Is Johnny Galecki going to be on it? So they'll be doing two things at once?
I don't know. I wasn't sure on that one. I just know the two of them definitely, and they were trying to get the kids to all come back. So maybe.
Know what they need to bring back is
it's only like 8 episodes.
Know what they need to bring back is Married with Children.
I figure after Modern Family goes away that's what'll end up happening.
We need some more Al Bundy in our lives.
That one. Won't
that's what America
back.
Needs right now is some Al Bundy.
I kind of feel like America feels the same way about Roseanne, bringing her back. So we're halfway through the Twin Peaks return, which has been...
I've never seen either version.
Yeah.
We need to know what Christina Applegate's character is up to these days. I can only imagine.
I don't know. She's doing more than... What's his name? I've not seen him in anything.
I don't even remember the guy's name, I've seen him in nothing.
Now...
So he needs the work. Bring him back.
Katie
Seagal?
Katie Seagal has been in everything.
Yeah. She stayed busy.
Yeah. She has been just about on every FX show that has come out over the past 10 years.
Good for her. Yeah. So... Yeah, we should have a lengthier discussion someday on shows that need to come back as opposed
versus
to some of
the ones that have
that have and maybe didn't need to.
Oh, come on, your kids
like
love Fuller House.
Fuller House.
Your kids love Full House.
We watched the first reboot season. It was it's okay. Right, they just tried too hard to with the nostalgia. Like, oh, here's so and so. This is entertaining because so and so showed up. That from the member from previously, that guy. It was that kind of thing. It was a little too reunion-y for me.
Wasn't Hunter Pence?
Hunter Pence
was
on it, I
thought so. Yeah.
That's all I mean, that wasn't unusual for that show. They had the Beach Boys on there before, celebrities would make appearances. But,
John Stamos tours with
he
the
was,
Beach
like,
Boys.
Dating Stephanie?
He was dating the Stephanie, the younger sister. Not the youngest, but the second.
Middle.
Youngest. Anyway. Hunter Pence needs to stick with his day job.
Really? Not a good I didn't see it, but I'm not surprised.
Not a great actor. Just, I'm afraid.
Knowing his personality.
So, that's it for this episode. Next time we'll just talk. Friday is the entertainment episode. We can talk more about shows that need to come back then.
Yeah.
We can do that. We'll have Jenna Parsons here, I assume. Scott Morris.
Yeah. Ask Jenna what she would want to come back. Mm-hmm. What shows she'd like to see come back.
Yeah,
make
sure.
A note.
Make a note, Chris. You got that. Good.
She's a good TV watcher.
Is she?
Yeah.
Okay.
Golf. Lots of golf.
No, she does like watching golf.
I'd really love to bring back the Golden Girls. Oh.
Can't. And Betty White's still around.
It's just Betty White. Still in the house.
That could actually be pretty funny. A one woman sitcom.
I love Golden Girls. It makes me sad to think that they're all gone. Yeah. God, when Betty White goes, she's a national treasure. Oh, it's going
to
be sad.
Don't want to think about that, man.
That's going
to
be sad.
Rest of them have died.
Yes, we know. Okay. How can they
listen
to us?
I hate growing up.
How can they? I know, right? How can they listen to us, Derek?
What's the point of listening to us?
I mean, they're listening now. So they probably already know how. Tell your friends how to listen to us. You can listen to us, of course, on iTunes, Google Play, any of your podcast apps. Also, stream it online at memo.djournal.com. You can hit the subscribe button if you're using a podcast app, and you'll get notified when we have new episodes. We'll also tell you when new episodes are dropping on Twitter at DJournalMemo.
Okay.
Got all that?
Every word.
Every story we talked about today you can find in your daily journal and or at DJournal.com.
Well, maybe not the Roseanne stuff, but most everything else. The local also stuff. The decapitating, I'm not sure we've got up on the website.
All the local stuff. Okay. I'll go look for that, see if I can push that to the website, to the front, about the decapitating squirrel that was rabid.
You want me to do that as my column on Friday? Here's things Bradlock didn't know.
Yes. Or your column could be about TV shows that need to come back.
Eh.
Check out our website, djournal.com. Follow us on Twitter at djournalnow.
Yeah. And we've moved on.
Okay. Right. That's it.
Back on Friday.
Back on Friday.
See ya.
With bells on.
What? No, I don't know. Bells? There will be no bells.
I'm wearing actual bells.
I'm not wearing any bells for you.
Bring boxing gloves. That's kind of what I meant.
Oh.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.